Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
This is Jeff Pizzuti from Illusion. You're listening to Talking Metal with Mark Striegel.
Welcome to another edition of the Talking Metal Podcast, home of all things hard rock and heavy metal. I'm Mark Striegel, host and producer of this show since 2005. Now, let's get things started with the Talking Metal theme song, written by Rob Halford, Metal Mike, and Roy Z. Welcome to another edition of the Talking Metal Podcast. My name is Mark Striegel, and joining us on the episode today, we have Jeff, who is from iIllusion, and he is the guy behind the Dio hologram. A great interview with Jeff, so stay tuned for that. And please welcome our co-host for this episode, Mr. Bill Wang. Wang, how are you?
I'm doing great, Mark. Doing great. The Asian Sensation is back on Talking Metal. Love it. What's up, brother?
Not much. Where are you today? Are you in Asia somewhere?
I'm in Wang Towers in downtown San Francisco. Yes, sir. Yeah.
Cool. Well, let's get things started with a little Talking Metal toast. I'm going to crack open my my cold one here. You drinking anything tonight, Wang?
Yes, I am, Mark. I'm honored to do a Talking Metal toast. I'm drinking Mission Street Hefeweizen.
Nice.
Yes, I am. And Talking Metal toast. Love it.
A long-distance dedication Talking Metal toast here, San Francisco to New Jersey. I am drinking Evil Twin Brewery, which I think is out of Brooklyn, New York here, and drinking some ale from them. I think they're a newer brewery. Good stuff. Here we go for a sip of the night. It's a Tuesday night, Mr. Wang. I don't know if you know this about me, but I do not drink on Sundays or Mondays, ever. It's just one of those crazy anal retentive things that I do. So every Tuesday, it's just it's like falling into the pool. You know, it's just so nice to have that first taste of alcohol, and I'm honored to do it with you here tonight. You've been a long-time member of the Talking Metal family. And let's just give some of your online sites and social media stuff a plug before we get into the interview with Jeff Pizzuti here. Where can people catch up with you online, Mr. Wang?
I appreciate it. Well, first and foremost, probably the best thing is, and the thing that is everything really, is Kiss 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 Metal and Hard Rock on Facebook. And if you just put in Bill Wang on Facebook, the guy with the little symbol, my symbol is H, really. I will add you to the group after that. But yeah, Kiss, 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 Metal and Hard Rock. Yeah, yeah.
Nice. Very good stuff. And the Dio Hologram hit earlier this year, and I was really excited by this news. Now, listen, it's not the real thing. It's a hologram, but it is a really great way to honor this man's music. And he's got members of his actual band, Craig Goldie, Simon Wright, backing him up, playing there with him, with the hologram. It's his actual vocal that you're hearing. I think it's a great idea, and I'm excited for what the future might hold, not only for the Dio hologram, but just for holograms in general. Did you have a chance to check out any of the footage from Vakken with Dio earlier this year, Mr. Wang?
Yeah, I did, and I had goosebumps, and I think it was fantastic. And I think that people have an issue with that, need to get a life. I think it's basically bringing him to life for future generations and generations that saw Dio live many, many, many times like I have. I thought it was fantastic. And I heard an interview with him somewhere. I'm not sure where, but I thought that his heart was in the right place. And yeah, man, big time. Big ups for him. And I was very pleased with it. And I'm really looking forward to the future. And like you said, with Dio's future and other artists. So yeah, I loved it.
Yeah, and I think you probably heard him on Eddie Trunk's podcast, which was one of his.
Oh, okay, yeah, all right on. And yeah, matter of fact, now that you say that, yeah, that's where I heard it.
Absolutely, cool. Let's get into this. This is We Rock, a song that Craig Goldie and the Dio Disciples performed with the Dio hologram, with Dio's actual voice in Germany earlier this year. Again, this is We Rock off the Last in Line record, followed by my interview with Jeff from Illusion, Jeff Pizzuti from Illusion. You watch the faces, you see the traces of the things they want to be, but only we can see. They come for killing. Hey, this is Mark Striegel of the Talking Metal Podcast. I'm here in the TikTok Diner, sandwiched between Madison Square Garden and Hammerstein Ballroom, two places I go to see a lot of shows, with Jeff Pizzuti. How are you, Jeff?
What's going on, Mark? How you doing?
Dude, how was Lynch Mob last night?
Lynch Mob is always good. You know, Oni and George brought it, and Sean and Jimmy, they were great. Absolutely great. Sounded amazing.
Cool. And do they do Dokken stuff too, or is it just Lynch Mob stuff?
They did two Dokken, well, three, if you include Mr. Scary. They did Hunter, and they did Into the Fire. They both sounded awesome.
Cool. And what about the Dokken reunion? Were you did you catch the one and only U.S. show? Probably not.
No. No, I would have loved to have gone too, but the I watched the some of the footage they had on YouTube from Japan, and I thought it sounded great. I know that they would be very successful. They did a U.S. tour, but see what happens.
Right on. I want to talk to you about your company and what you're up to with all this hologram technology. Illusion. I'm pronouncing that right?
Yeah, Illusion.
I first heard you on Eddie's podcast, Eddie Trunk's podcast, and I found your interview so much more fascinating than the guy from Faster Pussycat or something. It was a really, for Eddie's podcast, it was a breath of fresh air, you talking about something a little different, about this amazing technology. And again, this is hologram technology, which has been around for a little while, but for the metal community, it's kind of become more of a thing since the debut of the Dio hologram, which you're behind, and I want to get into that. But before we talk about the Dio hologram and all other holograms you might be working on, let's talk about the history of holograms and how you got involved with this technology.
Sure. So I mentioned on Ed, I saw Tupac in 2012, and I was actually blown away being a music fan and thinking about what could be done. I had heard about it, but I didn't realize how far it had come. And after seeing that and seeing it in a live environment, I actually started to get my mind going about what we could use it for, from the artists that I love and the artists that I know that a big community loves, whether it's the rock or hard rock or, all genres, but especially the rock and hard rock world. And, for a couple years worth of research and doing things together is really where I started to put the pieces together and getting the right people involved. But I thought if done right with the right people behind it, we could make something really special. Hence, where we ended up with doing Ronnie to start.
Okay, so this was a couple years in the making. You're talking about. So you got the idea in your mind, and what are the first steps? Like, who do you? I mean, I wouldn't even know who to call up and talk to about it. I mean, how do you research this? How do you find out who the hologram experts are?
So it's so funny. I went to school with a guy named Aaron Vest, and we went to the University of Central Florida, and he's in Hollywood. He does visual effects for a living. And he was one of my first phone calls post, having the idea, because I wanted to validate not only how it was done, but also could it be done for the way I see it, the way I envision, not what had been done prior, but how we can take it to the next level. And that's where the conversation started, and he actually started to kind of direct me in the right, to talk to the right people. And one of those people beside the on the artist side was a guy named Scott Ross. And Scott, who was the CEO of Digital Domain, was also partners with James Cameron, and they had done Titanic and Terminator and T2. He put me in touch with him, but he happened to be a huge music lover. And Scott was the one who's not only a friend now, but also a mentor and a business partner to try and take it to the next level. And that's where we started moving.
Okay, so we flash forward. You get involved with Wendy Dio and creating the Ronnie Dio hologram. Tell us a little bit about the debut of that. Really, the one and only performance done. Yeah.
So let me tell you so before we do, we get to the actual performance, we'll talk about the making of it, which I think is important. So Scott actually got me in touch with a guy named Chad Finnerty. Chad owns a company called Digital Frontier. They were actually partners with Illusion now. But at the time, he was another guy who we were actually getting in contact with. We kind of put together the team that way, like assembling the pieces. And Chad and his wife, Jamie, actually were huge believers in what we were doing, and they could see the vision, and that's why they were so excited to be involved in the project. Chad did a lot of the work on the Dio stuff. He actually created the Dio, with me and Wendy being involved, but step by step to actually create Ronnie James Dio the way we think the fans would love to see him. And obviously Wendy would love to see him as well.
Can I interrupt you for 1 minute? Now, you say create. Now, when I first saw this on Blabbermouth and I watched it on YouTube, I was with my wife and we were talking about it, and she was like, well, how do they do that? And I said, well, they probably take some old footage and they just blow it up into a hologram, and it's an actual performance that he did. Later, I found out that's not the case. This is the mind-blowing part of this. This hologram stuff is created from scratch.
It's 100%. I mean, it's a labor of love. It's a lot. It's a very labor-intensive project. But the thing was, especially with Ronnie, And us, you know, it being our first one from this aspect, me being a Dio fan and Wendy obviously being his, you know, his wife and manager for a long time, we had, you know, she had the final say and everything, but the thing was we had the image of how we wanted to create him. We knew we had to be, you know, from a fan's perspective, it had to look, feel just like Ronnie was on stage. And that's what I thought we accomplished. We did a great job. And it's exciting for me because seeing it and seeing it from the pit where I was watching it and being next to Wendy and Todd Singerman and all watching it together, it was exciting because it actually allowed us to really, you know, see the emotion, but also hear the emotion behind us as the crowd was, you know, erupting when they saw him appear on stage again. It was incredible.
And tell us again where the performance actually took place. Germany, right?
Yes, it was at the Wacken Music Festival in Germany. It was the first week in August. I don't remember the exact date. I want to say 7th, maybe 8th, but it's, you know, at this point, it's like, it seems like it was a year ago, but right. It was great. It was actually really, really successful. I thought that what we tried to accomplish, we did. I thought the fans were very receptive. I thought that, you know, that actually is where we set the bar. We're only going to blow it away, and we'll talk about the future stuff. But where we're heading with the new with the tour and stuff is going to be amazing.
And when you, again, you're designing this Dio hologram from scratch, basically. This isn't pre-existing footage. So everything, as far as his outfit goes, his look. Were you basing it on a certain era? Did you have discussions, well, we're going to do the 83 Dio, or we're going to do the 93 Dio, or 2003 Dio? What was the overall consensus as to what Dio is going to be presented here?
For that performance, we tried to morph a lot of different eras. So we tried to morph basically, you know, the best of Ronnie in the look and the feel. So it wasn't like he was wearing like the 83 Holy Diver outfit or the 85 Sacred Heart Tour, you know, outfit. We kind of morphed the outfits, we morphed the look. And, you know, for the tour, we're going to do something different. I mean, for the shows that's going to be, you know, that we're creating now, it's going to have a different look. He's going to have different, you know, different looks throughout the show. And I think that, you know, for that show, we wanted to kind of bring what we thought was the epitome of Ronnie at that, you know, at whatever point in his career it was. I think he was like, probably shot for about 88. Dream Evil era is probably where we actually had to look. But, you know, I think that, you know, this next tour, we're probably going to be somewhere later than that for certain songs, and maybe earlier than that for other songs. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. So he could actually have different looks and different songs.
Exactly.
And, yeah, to represent different points in his career. Yeah.
Exactly.
Awesome. So, with Wendy, how involved was she with the actual creation of this thing? Was she a part of the creative team, or were you kind of just bringing her a finished product?
Wendy was so involved. Wendy's involved in every step. You know, her and I were, you know, we became, you know, like, you know, when you do partners, you actually become, you know, one and the same. Like, you're all for the same goal. So we actually did it every step together, you know, basically from the rehearsals, you know, from what we wanted to do, from this to that, everything she was involved with the band, without the band, from the creation of the Ronnie, every step she was there. And, you know, she'd always be there, and whether it was on the phone or, you know, I was always out in LA, so, you know, going to LA, you know, showing her some of the finished product, emailing every step. And like I said, you couldn't ask for anything more from Wendy. She's amazing. And I think that's really what, you know, what we became, you know, when we became partners like that, it actually helped me because, you know, I have a vision, she had a vision, and together we actually created what I thought was a pretty incredible product that I think that I know I'm very proud of, I know she's proud of, and I know it's only going to get better.
You've hinted here that there could be a potential tour or more shows on the way. When might we expect that, and how is that all going to happen, like, with the band, and, like, what can we expect?
So, with related to the tour, I mean, I'm not ready to announce anything yet, but we'll probably be announcing, I would say, within the next 2 months or so. We'll probably have some you know, future plans. We are in production for the show, for this tour itself, and I can tell you it's going to be over-the-top, mind-blowing experience. You know, we're going to have both a live, you know, live singers with Ripper Owens and Odie Logan as part of the show, as well as Ronnie appearing throughout the show in different parts. Some duet segments. It's gonna be mind blowing from a fan's perspective. The other part that I want to mention about the show, which is the first time it's ever be happening, is we're gonna bring alive some of the effects using the technology. So in other words, bring album covers to life, bringing things that have been known to Ronnie to life on stage. So it's like as you're being experiencing a brand new visual that you've never seen from a live perspective. So it's going to be, from a visual perspective, it's going to be mind-blowing. And to be able to see Ronnie's, you know, hear and see Ronnie again, it's going to make this whole thing come together in a way that from a fan, it's going to be like you'll walk out and say, holy crap, I can't believe what I just saw.
And again, you're not going to reveal too much about the tour, but I'm assuming it would be the Dio Disciples involved.
Correct. It's going to be the, you know, Ronnie's band for the last 20 years, which are the Disciples now, which is Scott Warren, Craig Goldie, Simon Wright, Bjorn, who's the newer Bjorn Englund, who's the bass player. And, you know, we're going to have Ronnie featuring. Ronnie will be involved in each show, probably about 6 to 7 songs a night that he will be singing on, you know, which you can expect. A couple of the ones we know he's going to be doing is, you know, We Rock, Holy Diver, and Rainbow in the Dark. And the other ones I'm going to keep. You know, keep it kind of to myself because I don't want to spoil the surprises.
Right. Well, I have this fantasy that I'll just throw out at you, and you can not comment or comment. Yeah. But I spoke with Craig Goldie on Talking Metal less than a year ago, and he told me that there is at least one unfinished Dio song that he thought was he was raving about that is really good. And I think it would be amazing if you could get that song and debut it and have Ronnie play that song, you know, in the hologram form.
There's always that possibility. I'll never commit to anything, but I will tell you, there's always a possibility. And with what we can do and versus what we have done, it's just the beginning for the fans. So I don't want them to think that what they saw is the best. I can honestly tell you the best is going to be so far above what they've seen already, you know, on YouTube. We're going to blow people's minds.
And you know, I'm getting excited just talking to you about this. But you mentioned YouTube. Is the YouTube experience just like, I mean, we had Jeff Tate on recently, and he was like, you can't watch for a regular performance. You can't watch a YouTube video and think that that's how it felt when you were in the room. And I'm assuming, even though I thought personally the hologram came across pretty good on the videos that I saw on YouTube, I'm assuming that the live thing is just a totally different experience.
And that's exactly it. You know, that's what we're about. Because, you know, just like with anything, when you watch a DVD or a Blu-ray or anything of your favorite band, no matter who it is, and even if you have a great sound system, it still does not replace going to the live show. It doesn't replace the minute you hear the guy plug the amp, you know, the guitar into the amp or sound checks or anything. There's something about that experience that's really important. That's what our whole business is built on, because we don't want people to ever lose that. Because I think it's like, we don't want it to become the forgotten art. We want people to understand that that experience is so important, and it's what I built my whole model on. The fact that when you sit in your seat and the lights are still up, and when the lights go down, the minute that smoke starts to rise, the lights start to flash, you know you're in for a real treat. And that's what it is, and that's exactly it. YouTube does not do it any justice at all.
Now, the technology behind it, we're talking about Ronnie James Dio, a vocalist, but what about other musicians? I mean, a guy like Lemmy played bass. You know, we had, in addition to singing, John Bonham, you know, Jason Bonham does this Led Zeppelin tribute where screens come up and he does a drum solo with his dad. Is the technology there where a hologram could play drums, a hologram could play bass or guitar?
Yeah, we could do anything. So we have a ton of ideas. You can imagine the artists we've already talked to. But yeah, we can go right down the list of who we want to, you know, quote unquote, bring back or who we want to work with. You know, the one important thing to remember, though, is we want to make sure that we don't think it's only about deceased artists, because what we can actually do is we can take artists, you know, whoever they are, the most important artists that are currently playing right now, and capture them in certain elements where we can create these what I call album shows or live shows. So we can get artists to record their favorite albums and do stuff live in front of an audience. And we can translate that into all these different theaters. So if they're not on tour, if they're, you know, taking a break or they're doing this, we can actually just go see, hey, let's go see artist A, you know, $20 to go see them perform this album in its entirety. I mean, think about it. Think about, you know, Judas Priest or Iron Maiden. You know, they haven't done those full albums except for Priest and British Steel, but Maiden doing Number of the Beast. Or, you know, it would be amazing to see them do it. And then all of a sudden you're like, holy crap. And you have the effects, and you have this, and you sit there, and you look like they're on stage. They have the live, the audio, right. You got the lights, and this is in a small, intimate theater. It'd be great.
Right. And one quick question about the which I think is probably self-explanatory, but the music of this actually, you're obviously getting isolated tracks, right? So for a drummer, you would need isolated drum tracks from some performance somewhere, right?
Yeah, we would actually have to, I mean, we could always use the engineer to isolate it for us, but yeah, we would need an isolated track of whatever kind of was, whatever the artist was. The good thing is, over the last 20 years especially, most of these artists do record a lot of the shows, whether they're going to use them or not. They do professionally record them just because they like to have them. So that happens quite often. So there's always that the track out there, just like with Ronnie. Ronnie was a perfectionist when it comes to these things. He recorded so many shows, didn't use half of this, an eighth of the stuff that they actually did. But, you know, he was such a perfectionist. He wanted to hear it for himself. So we have all these, you know, mastered audio vocals, and it's incredible.
And are you mixing and matching stuff? Or are you taking, like, songs in their entirety?
Songs in their entirety, right. But we are mixing and matching errors. So when you see a show, you know, it could be a 91 show that you're actually going to hear from a vocal. You could hear a, 2000 show. You could hear an 85 show. The vocal is going to change, and it's going to depend on what feel we want for that song.
Right.
So if it's a Rainbow Era song, maybe we go for an older feel. If it's a, it's just going to depend on the what we want to choose from. So that's what makes it really cool.
Right on. Now, I saw this amazing technology that was debuted, I think, a week or two ago. I just wanted to ask you if you knew about it. Adobe Project Voco. Have you heard about this? It's voice replication. So, and it's pretty incredible. And I thought with what you're doing, it could be helpful, because you can take somebody's line and it captures the sound of their voice, the way they pronounce the words, and it replicates it and can make somebody say something they may have not actually said. Maybe you're already on to this. I don't know.
I have heard about it. I mean, I would see your point, too, and I think that could be very cool if you're going to try and, like you said, make, like, obviously Ronnie wouldn't say, say he never played Buffalo. He said, right. Welcome to Buffalo. He had, but I'm just saying. So I think it would be cool to do something like that. It's always an option. You never know. We're always trying to keep the technology, be in the forefront of everything. So we always never say no to options like that. So we'll see.
And we've spoken a lot about Ronnie James Dio. Are there other, I'm sure you probably can't reveal, but are there other artists you're in, let's say, serious talks with at this point?
Yeah, so the other artists we're in serious talks with are all what I call living artists. So just want to give you it. So it's So it's just want to give you an idea. So the model is both, and we're hoping to make those announcements hopefully by the beginning of next year, maybe later this year, but I would assume probably the beginning of next year to make it official.
Living artists, so somebody would maybe give a concert and then have a younger version of themselves come out or something like that.
Similar to that, yeah. So it's more of that album show concept that I gave you before, something like that. It's an intriguing thing for artists, because the one thing that I found, and you can, this too, is that a lot of the artists that have been doing this for a long time can't play as, don't want to play as many shows as they did, or have, just to go on the road every year to do 60 shows is just becoming, it's a bit tiresome. It's a labor-intensive project, putting all the crew together and everything. And this model actually allows them to not have to do that and still make revenue. And I think that's the key, Right. So it's a fan pleasing model, which is also an artist pleasing model, and I think that's when you can match the two together and make a perfect marriage without having to go on a major world tour, and this way it keeps everybody keeps it hot for when they do come back, or there's so many different options, and we can actually live stream as well, so we can take an artist in a bigger venue and beam them into a smaller venue and all kinds of stuff.
Cool. Yeah, it's amazing, and I'm totally with you on this. I think it's exciting for me to think about seeing a guy like Ronnie James Dio be recreated and perform again. There are people, though, who are critical of this. There's been a number of blabbermouth headlines with, such and such, let the dead be dead or something. And what? How do you take that criticism? And do you have any response to the critics?
I always take it with... you're always going to have your critics, and I don't ever like to address them directly, but I would always say I do take everyone into mind whenever we do, but I know that what we're doing is from the good place in our heart. I know having this family-orientated atmosphere is what we created in Illusion is great. We're working with the best of the best when it comes down to visual standpoint as well as, creative standpoint. Our sound and light guys, Paul Dexter, and Paul had done a lot of the Dio stuff back in the 80s, and now currently is with REO Speedwagon, but he's actually He did our stuff in Germany. And, you know, having people like that, as well as, you know, working with Art Media, who's my partner for the technology standpoint, those guys have been great. Wendy, obviously, Todd Singerman, Kenny Arnoff, you know, Scott Ross. I mean, it's Chad Finnerty. This is an incredible list of people that we've actually assembled. So, you know, when it comes to critics, you're never going to please everybody. I've learned that, you know, for years. And you know that was going to happen. And I'm just happy that the people that do understand it and do get it and actually did see it and really validated what we were doing makes me, you know, ecstatic. Because I know that this bar was set very low. And we set the bar high, but what I mean is it's just the beginning for what we're going to do. So when people see the show and they come and they actually experience the show for themselves, they're going to say, holy crap, I can't wait to see another one.
Well, on that note, that's a good ending point there. And, Jeff, best of luck to you. Again, iLlusion is the company. Is there somewhere online people can go to check out iLlusion and see what you're up to?
Yeah, so you can go to iLlusionLive.com, which is our website. You can follow us on Instagram. We have our YouTube channel, which is iLlusion Live. Twitter, iLlusion Live, and Facebook as well. So, you know, keep tracking us on all the social media aspect. We are going to be extremely active, especially coming 17. And we are looking forward to, you know, the next one we talk about, which is the tour itself, which we love to talk about. So,
and some big announcement you said in maybe 2 months or so?
Yeah, I would say the major announcements, there's two that we'll probably announce early in January, maybe, you know, later this year, but I'm assuming January.
Right. Okay. Very good. Jeff, thanks so much for joining us on Talking Metal.
That was my interview with Jeff Pizzuti from iLlusion. Big thanks to Jeff for joining me on the podcast. That interview took place in a restaurant, a diner in New York City, sandwiched right between the Hammerstein Ballroom and the famous Madison Square Garden. So great to speak with Jeff and hope to catch up with him again in the future. Great to have the one and only Wang here as my co-host. Wow. What do you want to do, Wang? You want to talk about Kiss? You want to go to some calls from the listeners? Where should we take this?
Hey, man, go for a couple calls. I got some things to say about Kiss, but yeah, go for a couple calls. Why not?
Right. Okay, here we go.
Hey, Mark. This is Jerry from Long Island. Just listened to the show.
Hey, Jerry.
Great,
how are you?
Great episode. Hey, I was referring on Eddie Trunk for him not playing any new music on any of his podcasts for the fear of legal reasons, and that you always seem to play new music and say, fuck it.
Yeah.
That's what I was referring to.
Cool.
Anyway, maybe you could play Out of Subconsciousness by Terra Maze. Keep up the good work, dude.
Thanks, Jerry. And you're becoming a regular here on the podcast. I think this is your third call in. Please don't stop. I'll have you on every episode if you keep calling in. Terra Maze, we will get to that song in just a minute. And I don't know if you heard the last episode, Wang, but yeah, he ended his call saying, and fuck Eddie Trunk or something like that. So I think I was kind of defending Eddie Trunk. I was just sharing my personal opinion about Eddie Trunk. I mean, I know the guy; he's a great guy, and I know he does cause some controversy here and there. Thoughts on Eddie Trunk, Wang?
Well, yeah, and back to piggyback on what you're saying, the last episode with the great Victor Ruiz from Spain. Absolutely, I heard that episode 638, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I did hear that, and. Jerry from Long Island. If he's talking about Eddie Trunk not playing new music. Eddie Trunk doesn't play any music on his podcast. You know what I'm saying? Old or new. And so, I don't get that. I don't understand that. I always found it interesting that you do play music, but you always like cut it. So it seems like it somehow bypasses all the whatever. But as far as the band that he made mention to, I'm unaware of them, but I will look into them. Absolutely.
Yeah, we'll play some of their music here in a second. But the truth is, you know, I play music on the podcast. I do try to sometimes talk over the top of it, and sometimes I'll fade it out a little early. I've become a little more laxed on that through the years, and I try to let the songs play out almost in full Having said that, that's complete nonsense, because any way you slice it, what I'm doing is 100% illegal. You can't play music on a podcast. It's unless you have a lawyer who's clearing it. And I lose about $200 a month doing Talking Metal. If I were making $100,000 a month, I would maybe hire somebody to help me clear it, and I'd probably have to pay a lot of money to legally use the songs. I'm not alone. You know, Michael Butler, who does the Great Rock and Roll Geek Show out of California, he plays music out of San Francisco, actually, your neck of the woods. A lot of people play music. Joey of the Rock Strikes 10 podcast, which I just love that podcast, he plays music. Adam Curry used to play music on his podcast. I haven't listened in a while. I don't know if he still does. I mean, he'd play like Michael Jackson. Lon Fren plays music. Listen, all these guys, no one's clearing the music. I've had conversations with people at Sony Records who have said, you know, play a little bit of the new Ozzy here. Play the new, you know, Tom Kiefer in full. You know, I've had people tell me at Metal Blade, play whatever the hell you want off of any of our records. It's yours. You know, I've had people at Century Media tell me the same thing. But it's still not really legal. It's not. I'm not dotting all the I's and crossing the T's, even though I have emails from many people saying play music. You know, when I played Iron Maiden on two episodes ago, I didn't have clearance for that. You know, I look at it like I'm promoting the music. I'm doing my best to tell people to buy it, and I don't want to do a podcast where I don't play music. So if one day, you know, after 11 years and 640 episodes, somebody comes and shuts me down and says, you can't do this anymore unless you stop playing music, I'm out. I'm not doing this anymore, because I do this because I love music. And Eddie Trunk probably makes a little money doing his podcast. It's hard for me to believe that he would make much. I think it's more of a platform for him. But he does it on Podcast One, which is a big podcasting company. They don't want to get sued. They make money, or at least they're trying to make money. I'm not even really trying to make money. Sure, I ask you guys for PayPal donations and to use the Amazon links. And some months, out of the $200 I spend, I might make back 40 or 50 bucks. You know, but but so I'm not worrying about it. I'm gonna play music like this song right here, the one you requested, Jerry. Tara Maze, let's check it out right now on Talking Metal.
Electrified, I'm dead inside, you know where.
As requested by Jerry from Long Island, the new Talking Metal regular, Terra Maze. So, good stuff. Thanks for checking in, Jerry. And you ready for another call, Mr. Wang?
Oh, I'm absolutely ready.
All right, let's do this. Here is the next call coming in from overseas.
Hi, Mark.
Hi.
My name's Ian. I'm phoning from
Ian.
The West Midlands in England. Hello from over the pond. I'm not sure if you had many international guys phone up your show yet, but
you're the first.
Just listen to your podcast. Been only listening to them for 7 or 8 months. I'm new, but love the stuff. Big rock and metal head over here. Love all the interviews that you do. I find you genuinely a very educated and intelligent interviewer.
Thank you.
There's not much of the sort of cursing and the fuck yeahs and all this sort of shit, which is fine, but you seem to get good answers out of all your interviews, which is great. I'm a massive Rage Against the Machine fan.
Awesome.
So I haven't got anything new sort of influences to give over to your listeners, but I wonder if you could ever get someone like Tom Morello or Zach De La Rocha on the podcast, or Brad Wilk, the drummer, or Timmy C on bass over for an interview. That'd be amazing. I'm also a really big extreme fan, which I know a lot of like metalheads probably aren't into, but a lot of people dismiss them because they're known for their the More Than Words sort of band. But
right.
I wonder if you could play either something like a Rage Against the Machine tune. I forget which one it's called now. Fistful of Steel.
Okay.
Or perhaps Warheads by Extreme, just to show people that Extreme can really muscle up and rock out.
Cool.
Anyway, love the podcast. Great stuff. Thanks for keep it going. Keep it rocking from the UK. See you later.
Ian, thank you so much for calling in. The first call from overseas. I appreciate that. We will hit a little extreme. Warheads, the song you requested in just a minute. Rage Against the Machine. I love that band. We recently played Prophets of Rage on the podcast, which is a new thing I'm sure you've probably heard of, with basically the Rage Against the Machine band minus Zach. We played one of their tunes, which is quite good. And were you a big fan of Rage back in the day, Wang?
Oh, absolutely. I love Rage Against the Machine. Ian West Midlands, my man. Love it. Yeah, I love Rage Against the Machine. Actually, I love the Audioslave band, actually. I actually saw the very last Audioslave concert,
wow,
November 19th, 2005 in Las Vegas. But yeah, I love Rage. I am not one of those metal elitists that can't get over the fact that Zach is rapping. You know, they were the originals, so I think they get a pass. But yeah, it was a big Rage. And if I'm not mistaken, did he ask you to play a song?
He did. I'm not sure what song that was, though. I queued up the Extreme song that he requested, which is
Warheads. I'm not a big Extreme fan. But if I can recommend a song to play from Rage Against the Machine, it'd be People of the Sun off Evil Empire.
Yikes. Yeah, that's a great one. We'll definitely hit that. One thing he mentioned during his call was that he's been listening for 7 or 8 months. And You know, I got into this with Victor on the last podcast. I keep having this vision that, you know, Talking Metal is the Mark and John show. And you're a guy who's been listening since practically day one. But I tell you, all the people who are reaching out to me on Twitter, on Facebook, and now with these calls, they're all like, I've been listening, you know, 2 years. I've been listening 3 years. This guy, 7, 8 months. I feel like they don't know the same Talking Metal that you and Victor and some of the old school guys, you know, knew from the old days. And I mean, as somebody who's, you know, you're involved with the show from a distance, Mr. Wang, but you're not here every episode, obviously. But as a listener, what are your thoughts on that, the evolution of Talking Metal?
Well, I think the great Victor Ruiz from Spain pretty much nailed my consensus and my synopsis of the whole situation. And that was interesting to find that, yeah, I think I beat Victor being part. Victor joined probably a year later, but yeah, I joined literally in 2005,
right,
the team Talking Metal. But I think he nailed it. I think it's interesting, and I also think that that it is interesting that this new, which is awesome because you need new blood, and I think that's what's keeping Talking Metal going on and on and on and on. And the fact that there was a TV show on Fuse and whatnot, diddly dee. I understand how people could not know about John Astronomy, you know, and not know about the past. You know, that's what I was all about. You know, that's what I was bred on, is that. But yeah, I could see that, because let's be honest, he hasn't been part of the show in forever. You know,
right,
your sporadic occasions, he'd be on there, you know, blah, blah, blah. But as far as the formation, everything, yes, he was there, and I'm proud to be there. But yeah, I think Ace Frehley called, and John kind of,
yeah, but it was before.
Went away.
That. It was before that. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, honestly, I mean, when we look at the 11-year history, it's been for the first 5 years of this show, he was almost an equal member. I always feel like I pulled a little more than he did, but he was almost an equal member. And when I say that, or equal partner, I should say, I mean, behind the scenes stuff, web work stuff. I pay a girl in freaking Alabama to do the web work now. It's like, you know, and I love going out to a bar with or without a microphone and hanging out with John. I love, you know, I saw him at the Ghost show. We hung out. He's one of my lifelong friends. However, I do feel like there is some, resentment on my behalf that honestly, I feel like he's kind of abandoned the show. And he said this to me in person, you know, thank God you're still doing it and keeping it alive. And I love, you know, bringing him back and having him on episodes here and there. And honestly, I do enjoy having 95% of the control of this show at this point, which is about the breakdown right now between him and I. It's you know, about 95% of it, maybe more. I mean, he wasn't there for 13, 14 months. He didn't do an episode, you know, at all.
Right.
Zero. He hasn't done an interview in probably 4 years at this point, maybe 3 years. I don't know. But yeah, so it's interesting that the new people like Ian from the UK listen to the show, and it makes me happy in a way that they, as proud as I am of our history, that I've been able to bring back the show from a real low point. I mean, because I do feel back in 2008, no, not 2008, probably more like 2000. My second son was born in 2010. I was so overwhelmed with having two kids under the age of 2 years old, trying to make a living, that John wasn't doing anything on the podcast, even at that point, you know, 6 years ago, he was pretty much checked out. I really let the show go, and it was, you know, I was putting up an episode maybe once a month. I think we went like a year without any interviews. It was a real low point. And listenership had dropped off. Listenership was at an all-time high, obviously, when the Fuse show was on, but it dropped off in 2010. And It was about in 2011 that I really started to try to turn this around. And for the past 5 years, the listenership has been slowly coming back to the point where we're almost at, I'm proud to say, almost at the point we were when we were on Fuse. I don't think we'll ever hit that with when you don't have a national TV show. It's hard to, you know, attract the audience that a national TV show brings in, but you know, it, or helps bring into a podcast. But we're close to what we were, you know, and it's a good feeling.
Yeah, you know, and that's funny that you should say that. And yeah, I remember in you're describing a period that even I sort of went away for, you know, for all sorts of other reasons, life or whatever. But like in the beginning, those first 5 years, I mean, it was talking metal or death. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I was like just, you know, the Guns N' Roses stakeouts, you know, the, you know, I mean, I could keep going on and on, but just the bond you and John had. And then when that was broken, you know, and, you know, I had issues with John and we'd spoken, you know, but I, like Victor was saying, the quirkiness of him, I always, you know, I learned to love it and everything. And I'm really happy that it has rebounded, and for no other reason that your dedication, you know what I'm saying? Okay. You didn't let something die. I mean, you could have easily, because, you know, podcasts come, I mean, like, for instance, there's a podcast that I'm on all the time, the Rock and Metal Combat podcast. That is the dedication of the fans on that fucking show is just, I mean, crazy. I mean, crazy. Sure, it's not Eddie Trunk. Sure, it's not Talking Metal. But the dedication, and because it's not on a lot of platforms, it doesn't have the dedication, but the, I mean, the exposure, but the dedication. And I can remember a period of time where the dedication and everything was the same as what, you know, it is now. And you're bringing it back. And I think that's great. You could have easily just, you know, folded your hands and said enough, but you know what? You built something. So, you know, hey, everything goes in ebb and flows. Things go up, things go down. And the fact that, you know, come on, let's get real. Rob Halford, Ace Frehley, you know, we can name all these stars. You name every star, and I'm not kissing ass, okay? But you name every star in the metal horizon. They've all been on Talking Metal. Everybody, okay?
Well, and except Metallica, I can't.
But... Yeah, right. And I'm surprised you never got them on the Fuse. But anyways, with the exception of Metallica, but. The larger point is, yeah, there's a foundation there, and I get the new fans that are coming on. I'm really happy for it, and cheers to you, you know, because it could have easily died, and I think you're rebuilding it, and I'm proud to be part of the rebuilding. I want to be on the show as often as possible, man. I love it, and yeah, right on.
Awesome. Cool. Well, let's kind of change gears here and talk about KISS. And I
tell boy.
You,
oh yeah, boy.
Yeah, I feel like I was literally being attacked by people who claim to be insiders saying that I don't know what I'm talking about. And now I just have to say KISS has announced tour dates in 2017. If somebody told me the reunion with Ace is happening in November of 2016. Well, guess what? That didn't happen. And now the tour dates for 2017 are being announced, and no Ace, guys. There was no credible evidence for this. This reminds me of like these, like, you know, crazy political people who want to believe stuff that isn't true on both sides of the political aisle. You see that? It's just, if you want to believe that, you know, Sarah Palin said something or Obama wasn't born in the U.S. If you want to believe it, no matter what evidence there is to prove that that's wrong, and that, you know, Sarah Palin never said, I saw Alaska from my porch, but people believe that she said that. She never said that. You can go online and research it. But if you want to believe it, you will believe it. You know, same thing with all the stuff they say about Obama. If you want to believe it, you will believe it. And here, people wanted to believe so bad that Ace was joining KISS, although there was no credible evidence. There was nothing pointing to that. That I was getting torn a new asshole by people. And all I can say is it's not happening, guys. I told you so. And KISS is going on tour with Eric and Tommy in 2017. End of story. My predictions for KISS is at some point they will do a farewell tour, most likely without Ace. And they will try to cash in on a farewell tour, just like all these other bands have done with, you know, we saw Sabbath do it. We've seen, you know, Motley Crue do it. And, you know, I think Ace will never again play in Kiss. I could be wrong about that. That's speculation. But I told you, Ace was not rejoining Kiss. What Ace has said publicly is what I've heard. The ball's in their court. Ace has told Paul that and Gene that he's ready to rejoin. He's ready to work with them again. So I don't know. Were you a believer that he was going to end up back in Kiss in 2017, Wang?
God, I don't want to be two-faced here. Was I a believer that it would happen? No, not necessarily. Did I think because Gene and Paul are obsessed with money, did I think it was a possibility? Sure. Was I rooting it on? No. I've seen Ace with Kiss over 20 times. I wanted it to happen for my woman, Mrs. Wang, Jean Elizabeth.
Sure.
Because, because she's so into it. And I told her, would I be excited if it happened? Absolutely. But I don't know, man. I never was online saying it's going to happen. Like all those people that are saying that they were directing all their predictions to you, Mr. Mark Striegel, Mr. Talking Metal. But no, I didn't think it was going to. But the thing I have to say about the Kiss situation, the current Kiss situation, I was told, you know, just like you were told by a lot of people, oh, it's going to happen, it's going to happen. Well, I was told that this Kiss cruise that's based on the Creatures of the Night tour, the recreation of the Creatures of the Night tour, was only going to be a one-time deal. You know, looking at Tony right. Thayer dressed up as Ace in the Elder costume with the promos of the Creatures era, that was it. Now all of a sudden I hear, oh no, like you just said, they're going to do this European tour. They did the Mexico thing, and they're all going to be like hip hip hooray. They're going to dress up Eric Singer in Eric Carr's costume, but Peter Criss's makeup. We're going to put Tony Thayer in Ace's Elder Creatures costume. My thing is that there's nothing. Where the hell is Vinny Vincent? Where the hell is the Eric Carr?
Wait, so is this true? They're gonna put Eric. This doesn't make any sense. They're gonna put Eric Singer in Peter Criss face makeup, but they're gonna have him wear the Fox Eric Carr outfit.
Mark, it just happened. It just happened
really?
On the. Yeah, dude, I swear. It just happened on the Kiss cruise and a Mexico metal fest. And the general consensus was it was on a one-time deal. It was only on the Kiss cruise. Don't trip, Bill Wang. Don't get crazy. And all of a sudden, bam! Now all of a sudden we get a press release from Scab Kiss saying, oh, yeah, we're going to be touring Europe with the Creek. Yeah, and I kid you not, Eric Singer is in the best way they can possibly do it. And in Eric Carr's costume, but with Peter Criss's makeup. It's like,
that makes no sense. No,
well, first of all, I saw the Creatures of the Night tour. Okay.
Right.
And it's just a terrible representation of that Creatures tour. And I don't get all the scab apologists saying, well, they can't change the makeup. Dude, you put makeup on Eric Singer and Tony Thayer with Ace, and why not?
Are you saying Tony Thayer?
Yeah, you heard me correct. Tony Thayer. Okay. You cannot do it. I mean, here's the deal. I mean, if you're really going to be doing things, you know, I mean, come on. If you're going to recreate the Creatures of the Night tour, how on God's green earth are you going to put Ace or Tony Thayer in Ace's that costume from the Elder, you know? So yeah, I'm disgusted. I'm
right.
disgusted by. I'm just obviously my blood. I'm getting really upset right now, and I think. And what's more disrespectful, which is more disrespectful, is to see Eric Singer in Eric Carr's literal, at least facsimile of that creature's costume that I saw live April 3rd, 1983, San Francisco Civic, Motley Crue opened up. But with Peter Criss's makeup, it's like, dude, he was gone 2 years prior.
So what Eric Carr outfit? Is it the one that he first wore like on Kids Are People Too with the red jacket and the fox fur?
That was Unmasked. The best representation that I could recommend, if you go to Kiss, 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 Metal, Hard Rock, go, but anyways, it's Kiss Night Flight, I believe January 13th, 1983. If you put in Kiss Night Flight, then you'll see exactly what they based that costume on. But my thing is, you know,
Eric Carr was supposed to be a fox, but Peter Criss is the cat. So I don't, it's like some kind of fox exactly. cat hybrid or something.
I think it's disrespectful. I mean, I would say Vinny saved Kiss. Well, Eric Carr did his plenty of saving Kiss. And I think by putting Peter Criss's makeup on that guy with Eric Carr's costume, it's confusing in a total clusterfuck, and it pisses me off. And I'm just so upset just thinking about the thing. You know, it's just a horrible choice. You know,
are they like on these two, the Kiss Cruise and the Mexico thing or whatever it was, did they pull heavily from that era for the set list?
That's a great question, and no, actually they did. They actually played a Paul Stanley solo, a 78 solo album song. But if I'm not mistaken, I think, you know, I mean, if they stuck by the book and did exactly, you know, the exact song that the Creatures of the Night tour, because Creatures of the Night was different. They started out, they did Killer, you know, and then it changed up. But no, they didn't go verbatim. And if you're really going to be a facsimile of a specific era, a specific tour, I mean, come on. So, right. Yeah. But yeah, check it out. You'll go crazy.
Okay, I definitely will. I definitely will. Oh, man. So, So again, let's kind of recap your social media. It's the Kiss 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 page, right? And what goes on this Facebook page for Kiss Kiss Kiss? Discussion, what? Debate?
Yeah, discussion, debate. People from all over the world, thousands and thousands of people do stuff. And obviously, I'm the lead. You know, I say something and then, you know, it gets discussions going. There's a few scab apologists that I lit on the page, and I let them be the villains of the page, as it were. And then, you know, basically all the haters come on and rip them and stuff. But yeah, generally speaking, it's I consider 50% Kiss, 50% not Kiss. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And it's pretty crazy. And I've got all sorts of great, you know, I think the last time since I've been on your show, I've gained 2,000 followers. So it's not nice. Exactly huge, but it's more than a lot of these podcast pages that have groups, you know, and there's a lot of traffic, and I love it. And
so it's a group, or because I've tried to figure out how to start a group. I'm not real Facebook savvy, but because I have a page for Talking Metal, which I do like,
yes, I know you
with.
I see it,
but how do you start a group?
Oh man, I
and what's the difference? You have to join a group, right?
Yeah, you have to join a group, and if you join a group, if the person that invented the group doesn't like you, you're out of the gate. You're gone, right? But if you have a page like my beautiful Mrs. Wang has, the Ace Frehley Army, with almost 6,000 likes, It's different. Because, like, for instance, that one podcast that I hate, and I'm not going to even say the word, the, you know, three something like that, that's a page. So they basically determine who comments on there or whatever. But anybody can see that. But if you have a group, you could ban that person. They can't see anything. So that's what I got. Yeah, that's what I got, as a group. And it's, which you're a part of.
Right, yes, definitely.
And John Astronomy is part of, even though he never likes anything, but or whatever. But he's with Ace Frehley. And
right.
You know, speaking of John Astronomy, I love there was a podcast, I don't know how long ago it was, when you all were talking about Bill Wang. And he went on, and this is probably one of the last that he was on, were on a consistent basis. And he loved my name, Wang. Right. And he went on and on. Yeah. So,
yeah.
You know, big ups to John Astronomy. You know, we're all ripping him because he bailed on Talking Metal. But you know what? He's the man still. So,
yeah. Like, anyway. Like I said, for a while I was pissed about that, but I've kind of like now, honestly, I'm just loving it. I'm loving having people like Bill Wang and Victor, and my wife Emily has done a bunch of interviews and done a great job, and it's kind of opened it up. There's like a revolving co-host type thing happening here, and I'm having a lot of fun. I love doing just solo episodes. I love playing music for you guys, and that's what it's all about for me right now. It's just about having fun. For so long, I was like, well, we got to try to make money with this. We got to try to go to the next level. And it's just like, now I'm just like, fuck it all, man. I'm just going to have fun doing this. And this is probably, after 11 years, the most enjoyable. I mean, I have to admit, those first 3 years were really enjoyable. John and I had so much fun doing that. Since the Fuse show, really, this is the last 2 years here is the most enjoyable Talking Metal has been for me throughout our 11-year career, and that's no joke.
Wow.
So, yeah, seriously. It's
and hey,
so much
just
fun.
To piggyback on what Vic was saying about your wife, was I'm not going to lie, I was a little bit suspicious, but fantastic. I mean, she's been really, really fantastic. And I love that you, that when I called in that one time and she's all, and you said, do you remember Bill Wang? She says, oh yeah, I remember Bill Wang. I love it. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, you bet. Yeah. If you haven't heard, guys, you did a great interview with Mark from the Bullet Boys, which not many people have. Everyone keeps talking about the Jeff Tate interview and stuff, but the Mark from the Bullet Boys interview is excellent. So I forget what episode it was, probably, I don't know, 9-10 episodes ago. Go back and listen.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Coming from somebody from the past that's kind of irrelevant now, but was platinum album back in the day. Yeah. Mrs. Striegel did fantastic. Big ups to her.
Cool. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess, let's see. We're at about an hour here. I like to keep these to about an hour. We're actually well over an hour. We're probably about an hour 20 right now. So let's, I guess we should probably wrap things up, and we should definitely invite you guys to call into the show like the listeners did today. Stand by. Let me give you that number. It's 973-757-1917. That's the number, guys. Call in. I enjoy getting the calls, and it's picked up a little bit. I know I was initially giving out the wrong number, which I think prevented many people from actually reaching our voicemail. But this is the actual number, 973-757-1917. Call in. Tell me to fuck off. Tell me to play a song. Tell me anything you want. You will get played on the show, I promise. 973-757-1917. Leave me your voicemail. Wang. Wang, it's been such an honor having you as part of the Talking Metal team for all these years, going way back to the Talking Metal forums. Remember those? Run by Z-Man and Exciter. Exciter, his name was John Casamano, and I still occasionally hear from Z-Man on Facebook, but Shotaholic and John Casamano. I haven't heard from those guys in 4, 5, 6 years. Crazy. Family turns over. It grows. It evolves. And many people drop off, but Mr. Wang's still here after all these years.
You're goddamn right, brother. Talking Metal. I was there in 2005. And I'm going to be there forever. And I'm really proud to be part of the family. I've been on numerous episodes as Bill Wang, and I've been on many more episodes as another person, but I don't want to get into that right now.
Your former life.
My former life. So yeah, I've been on the show many, many times, and I'm honored to be part of the family. And I am saying, let's go for 700, 800, 900, 1,000. Talking metal, brother. Bam.
And to take us out, finally, the song requested by Ian. This is Warheads by Extreme. Talk to you next time.